The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
Hey, you. Are you a fantasy DM with more campaign ideas than prep time? Of course you are. Does your party have a peculiar knack for going that one place you'd never least expect? Of course they do. Describe, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B, offers over 7,000 scenes of places, monsters, and spells, and the collection keeps growing. They're just like box text from your favorite adventure book, but designed to be read aloud in your own campaign. Free your creative energy and time for all the other aspects of planning and running the perfect adventure, and stay ahead of your wayward party with the help of Describe's finely crafted flavor text. Visit Describe.com/RPGpod. That's DSCRYB.com/RPGpod. Use the code RPGpod at checkout to get 10% off your first subscription payment.
Today's podcast with Pelle Nielsen and Johan Noor is brought to you by Audible. Audible is the world's largest provider of audiobooks, including some of our favorites like The Monsters Know What They're Doing by friend of the podcast, Keith Allman. To sign up for a free trial and get a free audiobook, visit audibletrial.com/RPGbot.
Welcome to the RPGpod.podcast. I'm Randall James, and with me is Tyler Kamstra.
Hi, everybody.
And tonight we have a special guest with us. We have Johan Noor.
Hi, I'm Johan Noor from the Stockholm Cartel, and I'm doing a bunch of art and design work for a bunch of role-playing games.
And we also have with us Pelle Nielsen.
Thanks for having me. I'm the writer of the role-playing games. Most people know me as the writer of Mörk Borg. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. I get the feeling we're probably going to get into that.
Yeah.
Maybe. So I guess speaking of which, Tyler, what's happening? What are we doing tonight?
Well, we're going to talk a bit about Mörk Borg and the Mörk Borg cult series, and we're going to draw lessons from those products and talk about some things like managing community, third-party publishing, and bringing homebrew and third-party content into your games. Mörk Borg has set a really, really good example for how to build a community.
Yeah, so we want to talk about Mörk Borg. We also want to talk about the Mörk Borg cult, the community. Long-time listeners in the show know that we've talked about this a couple different times, but I know Tyler and I are both really impressed with the quality of the content that's being produced. And right, you're getting, like, what's the format that you tend to get that content brought to you in before you do the art, before you do the layouts?
If we talk about the Mörk Borg cult, that was the thing that we unfortunately don't really have the time for right now to work on. But when we did, that was pretty much directly after we released the book. We got people who were just inspired, I guess, from it and made stuff and sent it our way. And so we wanted to help them out and be a part of it and sort of take it in and make it semi-official in a way. And so, yeah.
And so at this point, there's been two supplements in that series. That's right?
Yeah,
that's right. The Territory and Heretic scenes. Yeah, so that's it.
Yeah.
We've enjoyed those both a lot. We've taken a lot of inspiration from those and dragged those things into other games. Like Randall was saying, just the quality on these things is excellent. The art's really good. The text is good. The content is novel and interesting.
Awesome.
The adventures are terrifying and murderous. Which I'm hoping is the intent. So it kind of surprises me to hear that it was so informal. So you published the original Mörk Borg core rules, and then you just received them informally from members of the community?
Yeah, I think the first one was actually before we released the game. There was like one of the backers, because we opened the Discord during the Kickstarter process for the first game. and then one of the backers in there just they had just received the books, just the backers, so it wasn't out in stores yet, but the backers had received the books.
Okay.
And then they started working on things and posted it on our Discord, and so I was like, oh, I want to do something, I want to like draw this that you've done. And so we collaborated. It was very informal, and it's always been, all our work has been very informal with the collaborators and between me and Pelle as well.
Out of all the content that was getting submitted to you on Discord, like how much curation did you have to go through to pick the things that finally made it into a product?
I think at the beginning, I mean, it was more manageable. And so we took most of it, you know, the stuff that we thought was that gave us something extra and that did something that we hadn't thought of, or something that, you know, elevated what we had done into something different and better. But then, you know, once the floodgates started open, and if we got more and more and more stuff sent to us, then we had to really sort of pick what we thought was going to be more valuable or like more different than the other stuff. And that was that's hard because most of the stuff, I mean, pretty much all of it was really good. So you had to choose.
That's the reason, one of the reasons why we released the third-party license, because we didn't want to stop people and make them wait for us and get the green light. And it was becoming quite stressful. So that's one of the reasons why we with a third-party license, not all the reasons. We really wanted to do that anyway, but that was one of the reasons, actually.
It was like, yeah, we had to do that.
Okay. One of the reasons it happened sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we felt like we were like a bottleneck of creativity almost, because like we wanted to collaborate with the people, but at the same time, we wanted people to get their stuff out there. So, it was a really nice moment to like open up the license and just let people like, you know what, you don't need us to do this. You can do this all by yourself and just release stuff.
Hey, wait, give me a second.
What did you roll?
I'm glad you asked, buddy. I just rolled my hollow dice of divine retribution, easy roller dice. Did you hear how beautiful those sounded?
Oh, those sounded great.
We've been playing a lot of online lately, what with you being literally 1,000 miles away.
This is very true. It is almost literally 1,000.
Yeah. I want to get your preference right here. Okay, so I'm going to roll my hollow dice of divine retribution from easy roller dice, and then I'm going to roll some other dice from the other dice store.
I'm sorry, are you rolling gravel? What is happening?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I like my jingle jangle probability polyhedrals.
Now, if I wanted to go and get myself some jingle jangle probability polyhedrals, where would I find those?
I'm sure glad you asked. I think the easiest way to find them is go to rpgbot.net/easyrollerdice. From there, we'll have links take you to the Easy Roller Dice store. Particular, call out these fine dice. So it's interesting. I feel like what I'm hearing from you is that in the beginning, people in Discord were like, out of passion and love for what you had produced, they were submitted to you like, hey, look what you inspired. Here's what you inspired me to make.
Pretty much.
And then once folks got the idea that like, and by the way, we might do layouts, we might do art, we might like bump this up, at that point, everybody's like, yeah, I'm going to put all my good ideas in.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's like, it's cool. Like this circle of inspiration and creativity, you know, where we inspire someone that makes something and then that inspires us to like, oh, we want to be a part of that, what you have done now. And so it was a back and forth, and kind of still is. You know, when we see people release their third-party license stuff, like we get inspired from that, we get energy from that. So it's really a symbiotic relationship that we have.
Awesome.
So with the third-party license, it's very permissive. People can do a lot of things with your third-party license, basically everything except use the official art. And I see a bunch of really interesting looking products on DriveThruRPG and in a couple of other places. Since you no longer have that tight control of being the ones who decide what does and doesn't get published, how do you feel about the quality of the third-party content that people are creating for Morkborg? Does it still like live up to your standards? Does it still look like most things out there are really good? Or how do you feel about all that?
I think it's very varied right now. in a kind of fun, like, DIY punky way. Like, not everything has to be super polished, you know? You can get that sort of raw energy, raw creative energy.
But I think most of the stuff are really good, actually. I think so.
Yeah.
And it's also nice to see that lots of people start with Kickstarters and with a third-party license, and everyone succeeds all the time. So that's very nice to see, actually. Everyone is doing okay.
That's awesome.
Just seeing the game grow.
Yeah, but no, but what I mean with, like, not to say that things are, but like, it's so fun to see that not everything has to be so polished and take so much time, because that's one thing that I've felt with some of the things that we've done, you know, lately, that we've put so much care into it, so that you can almost sort of lose that momentum and that energy that you can have when you don't really care about all the standards you have to meet or whatever. You don't have the... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it takes like half the time to produce 90% of the quality of the product, and then the remaining half the time to get that last 10% in.
Right.
And so if you just want to get it out there, like being able to use a third-party license to go put that product out there, yeah, sure. They spent half the time, they got 90% of the way there. Or, like, you know, it's not art. It's like connected scribbles, but it ultimately is still screaming at you how frantic this thing is supposed to make you feel. That was one of the big things that I took away from the layouts in the book. Like, so often, you know, for me at least, it's like I almost feel like I'm interpreting something because the layout isn't meant to be perceived so easy. So it's even distressing just to read, but in a way that makes, I think, the content a lot more exciting.
I mean, it kind of fits with the setting, you know, the world is falling apart. So
exactly.
It's the same thing. And yeah, same with the text, really, like you have to interpret some of this stuff. So
yeah. No, I think you nailed it. And then again, even that inspiration, then going to the folks that are producing third-party content, I don't know, feels pretty powerful.
Yeah, no, it's really fun to see. It's really fun to see this like tidal wave of just stuff that's coming.
Cool.
And to see this many people, like some of the people that have never created anything for role-playing games before, who see this as an opportunity and as, you know, an inspiration to do that. That's really nice.
So you talked about your Discord channel. Is there still a Merkborg Discord channel or a Stockholm Discord channel that folks can hop into?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
It's open for everyone.
Awesome. All right. So we will grab it and we'll put a link in the show notes if folks want to take a look, hop in, talk to folks. What are some of the conversations that are happening there?
It's very varied. Like we have some channels where it's just like random tables. People are crowdsourcing that. People are asking for inspiration for their game session, or, you know, ways to interpret the setting. Right now, there are discussions on where to buy real medieval flails.
Okay.
You know, it's everything in between, you know, so.
Okay, no, actually, I want to focus on this for a second. Any particular reason? Or they just want to do some wall decorations? What?
It was just someone who found a link to a website that sells, you know, LARP stuff, but it's real, like, actual weapons. I'm not sure about the legality of buying this, but I think it's just for decoration. Yeah.
Okay, I have to say, I feel like Merkborg would be, like, the most hardcore game to go LARPing.
Yeah, maybe we add some weapons in some future Kickstarter or something.
Yeah. We just have to double check just the rules for selling weapons. I'm not really sure.
It's like, you got something in the middle of the day. It appears to be a book and a javelin? I don't...
So on that note, potential future Kickstarters. So the two existing Morkborg cult supplements were kickstarted, and the... Ferritory got a bunch of Ennies, and I believe Heretic is nominated for a bunch of Ennies this year, so I'm hoping for you guys that you'll do well again. Are you planning to do more of the cult supplements in the future? Or is that a maybe, not sure?
I don't know. I think
it's kind of tricky. We have discussed that a little bit, but it's we want to surprise ourselves and everyone else. So it would be a little bit boring to release a third cult scene. And,
okay.
It would be quite easy to do that, but it would also be a bit boring.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to do something else.
And there is something else that I want to talk about in a little bit. Maybe we'll table, but then we'll come back in a second. To roll it back, so you said, and you pointed out, right, Merck Borg and its supplements have won lots of innies. Can you describe for folks at home what the innies are? Because I don't know if people in their everyday life are actually familiar with that award.
I tried to tell my friends that are not into role-playing games that it's like the Oscars for nerds.
And we would all love an Oscar.
That's pretty perfect. Yeah, the Oscars for nerds. All right.
Yeah. I mean, right. So the Nerd Tribune has given you several awards for layout, for design, for the core rule book itself. Like across the board, I mean, this stuff is well praised. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun to see. Yeah. And well, very unexpected as well from the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we never really intended for this book to be big. It took us by surprise. I think we have understood by now how big it is almost, but it took a while to mentally, you know, transport yourself from this being sort of a print on demand thing that was supposed to be from the beginning and to what it is now. But yeah, it's fun to see.
Yeah, something you just expect to see on shelves in game stores like from here to eternity. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I still tell you on that it seems like some people are playing our game and enjoys it.
Yeah.
It's on that level.
Maybe.
It's very hard to comprehend.
So how often do you guys actually get to play Morkborg these days?
Next question.
I know who that is. Yeah.
I don't know if you can see. So behind Tyler, there's a whole bookshelf full of books. Ask him how often he touches those books.
Yeah.
It's the curse of the game designer. You know?
It's more often than you'd think, but mostly for research purposes.
it's more because we're going to talk about something here.
You have played quite a bit, Johan.
I have,
especially
yes.
In the beginning, I think.
I've played a few times, but I mean, I rarely get the time to play at all. But when it's like a convention, I try to run a game or two. Otherwise, it's like once or twice yearly that I get to play at all. And then I play this game, you know?
I think like one of the cool things of going through, I guess, when you go through the playtesting part, when you're like, okay, how do we balance this? Is that a point in time where you do get an opportunity? Or even at that point, are you working with other folks to do the playtesting?
We don't really balance things, though.
Okay.
We mentally sort of like gauge, if that's how you pronounce it, mm-hmm. how we would be not balanced but like reasonable in the game setting, because we're not like really balancing it to the players, because if they're in the wrong place, then you know they're out of the league. So it's
their mistake.
It is, and I think one of the fun things about like this, the old school gaming like OSR, is that you have to find different ways around obstacles. They're not really balanced for you to like kill or you know use your abilities to fight, but you have to use your wits. And like if you're fighting a fair fight, you're fighting you know badly, so you have to do something else. And so yeah,
I feel like that's actually...
We don't really spend too much time.
That's actually really good playtest. Advice for just playing Morkborg.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. You should never have a fair fight. You know, always do ambushes or like do backstabbing and, you know, set up alliances and then break them. That kind of stuff.
100%. That makes sense to me. So you talked a little bit about Discord, the fact that folks are actually like either running tables or they're seeking advice for maybe games they're playing in, games they're running. I wanted to maybe come back and talk a little bit more about that. So if I'm a person sitting at home thinking, I really want to play Merkborg for the first time, you know, I can't get my group to go for it because we barely make time to play like our regular tabletop game. It sounds like hopping in the Discord, I ought to be able to use that to find a table.
Yeah, for sure. They're looking for a game. What's it called? Channel. Yeah, that's the one.
Okay, gotcha.
There's a bunch of people. Like, I think there's some people actually playing in the Discord, so... You'll find a game.
Yeah, there's pretty cool tools for that these days. So yeah, if you're sitting home and I've just described you can play. I had a question about kind of the content of Merkborg itself. So there's like the structure of it, right? The two-headed basilisk, the ideas of the gods, like a malevolent god that basically is looking, you know, is pain and suffering embodied. How much of the content in the core rulebook is inspired by like regional mythology, folk tales, this sort of thing?
It's a mix of lots of stuff. When I wrote the setting, and that was quite late in the process, actually, when we did the core book, I didn't plan for a setting in the first place, but we agreed on doing a setting. And it's a mix of both Greek mythology, but also like Eastern European mythology, and also historical stuff, like Elizabeth Bathory, of course, the blood-drinking countess. That was she's included in the book as well. And yeah.
So I actually don't know the historical allegory there.
And also some lots of European kingdoms, also historical from the, you know, the Baroque age, when they were eating a lot of food and getting fat and insane, and they killing a lot of people and stuff like that during the medieval age.
Yeah,
that was important to include as well. And the dark forests of the barbaric forests during the Roman empires and stuff like that, and Nordic folklore was very important with the dark forests up in the north, and of course the church, the big churchyard as well was very important. That was,
I think you have like some of the creatures, like the, I think we call them wickheads in the English versions, but that's originally in Swedish. It's called the Lyktgubbe, which means lantern man, which is like one of the a folklore creature that we have here. Kind of like Will-O-the-Wisp, but it's more of a like a little being with a lantern that lures you out into swamps to drown you. So that's, and this is like our take on that creature.
Okay.
Yeah, they look terrifying in the book.
Yeah.
And then we added some typical stuff from fantasy role-playing games, like goblins and lichens and wraiths and other kinds of,
but with their own monsters. Twists on them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like Merkborg's twist on the lich, where it, like, if I remember right, it eats magic or something along those lines.
Yeah.
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 So if you have a scroll of power among you, it will sort of take that power and use it against you, so you can't use magic near it.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I fooled the lich, though. I couldn't use the magic either. I always failed.
No, exactly. It's probably a lich nearby, you know?
That's actually what's happening. Awesome.
Yeah. No, but so there's a bit of folklore in there. And I think obviously, like, since we're from Sweden, you know, you have the trolls in there, mm-hmm. which is very typical. We see them every now and then here, but I think the setting is kind of Nordic in a way, not intentionally, but sort of because you wrote it, Pelle, and like it's in our subconsciousness here, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. And it was very important for us that everyone can use magic, you know, the powers. Everyone can do that, but it's not a very good thing to do if you are not too, you know, present in the moment. So if you have a bad presence ability, you often fail and end up very miserable. But but everyone can use it if you want to, or try to use it. That was very important. We didn't want to do, you know, like a class, like magic user and then a fighter and stuff like that. Solve it that way.
I really liked the supplement in Heretic, and this is something like when we did the review, it was something I really focused on. I liked the classless system. Mm-hmm. I liked not using the optional classes.
Yeah.
But I loved the feats.
Yeah, the feats are great.
That were added, and being able to, like, I can kind of customize the archetype of the player that I want to play by leveraging that. And there were things where, like, you know, what if I want to wear medium or heavy armor, but still be able to use scrolls of power?
Right.
You know, having those feats available to allow me to do this. Yeah, I thought that was a really awesome thing to add to the rule set. 100%.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, they're great because they also say something about, like they're almost like classes in a way, every feat. Mm-hmm. So you have like the shield breaker or the reckless attacker. I'm sitting with the book right now reading from it. I don't know this by heart. But then there's also like this one, you know, called likable, which is a very odd. It's a weird thing in this world. And so it even says like there's something about you you're best described as approachable, and it's weird. Like, it's, it's something strange about you.
Yeah, that just feels so out of place, which makes it that much more interesting.
Yeah, in a world where, like, there's no charisma ability score, because everybody's charisma is just minus three.
It's also, it was also very important that it should be quite short. You know, each class is on one or two pages.
That's just
maybe.
One page, yeah.
It was meant to be, you know, like easy to create your own classes. And that's what people have done, actually, especially in the beginning, the first year or something. It was a new class coming up every week, I think, or something like that. That was really great.
So this leads me to a different question. So one of the things that I was really impressed by is if you go to the site, pretty quickly you can find a page that gets you to something to roll characters, something to generate dungeons, something to give a random monster.
Yeah.
How did those come about? Were those things that were created by the community? Was that something done kind of within your sphere?
I think the generators are made by us.
I know, actually, originally the character generator, I think, because Carl Druid is the guy who's made all of these.
He did the digital generator, yeah.
The digital, yeah. He made the character generator on his own accord, I think, and like let us know, like, oh, hey, I made this thing. And so that's not really his voice, but almost.
No, it is now. To the everyone here, it is now.
Yeah. And then we, as we usually do when people approach us with these things, we're like, oh, hey, yeah, sure, we want to do this with you. We want to make this like an official thing. And so that's how our collaboration started with him. And since then, we've commissioned him to create generators from our tables that we have done.
That's awesome.
From the monsters and the dungeons.
He built those digital stuff from, you know, Excels and with lots of entries, I think.
Of
a dungeon generator, I think I did 500 entries or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's mad,
it was a really, you know, a Rain Man experience for me.
We love a good random generator. The Seeds of a Cult, like the first two pages of the Heretic supplement, I just absolutely love that thing. Like every couple of days, I just pop that open and roll on it a couple of times and something crazy comes out. I absolutely love that. So you mentioned the community, at least early in Merkborg's life, there were new classes coming out frequently. Have either of you gotten to play any classes that might not have made it into the cult supplements? Like, are you having fun playing other people's homebrew content?
When you get to play.
Yeah. I had a weekend when me and a couple of friends, not you, Pelle, sorry, but we like rented a cabin and played Merkborg for a weekend, and we went through so many character sheets because everyone died. But then I rolled on this massive list of just third-party classes, and so I've actually tried quite a few of them. And there are, like, I can't remember the name of the class, but there's one class that you're like cursed to carry this huge sword with you that you can never lose, and you can only attack with that sword. It's kind of like the big knife that Pyramid Head has in Silent Hill, you know.
Okay.
And that was really fun. And also another class that was like a plumber in a way, and we didn't realize it was really fun to have that class, but we didn't realize until after a while that this is just a riff on Super Mario. Like, this is a joke class.
He carries Mr. Mushrooms with him.
Yeah, every item was like a reference to a Super Mario thing, but we didn't catch those until very late.
he bludgeons people with a Piper Inch.
Yeah.
And his armor is overalls.
But it was fun. There's a bunch of good classes that I've tried a few of them, and they're really good.
I love that you said that you've basically just burned through a stack of character sheets, because we joke about that all the time. You know, so in the spirit of that, you got to play a lot of classes. What's the longest one of them lasted? I got about 15 minutes into this first encounter, just whoop.
No, I think one of my players had a character for several sessions, actually.
Okay,
so that's
several sessions is a long time.
Several sessions,
wonderful.
Yeah.
that's a good long lifetime.
But you have to remember that these players come to the table and they expect to die. Like, that's the mindset they have. Like, how can I make this character's death memorable and fun? You know, so that's...
Now, I really like the seven miseries. I like that campaigns have the, you know, when the world is going to end, and that's just the end of the game, and then you go burn your book and you have to buy a new one.
Yes. Yeah. Great to meet you, by the way. Way to sell books.
Have either of you managed to run a game that went all the way to the end of the world?
I have not, but I have not played the game as much as you one have, actually. I wrote the game, and then I kind of took a step back. But you one has played a lot more than I have, actually.
But yeah, I'm not sure. Thanks for that. Yeah. You have yeah. You're just dumping this into my knee. We've actually had one campaign in big air quotes because it was a few sessions only, but it ended with the end of the world because we wanted it to, like, we wanted to, like, push it that to that point. So we just said, we just chill here for a couple of weeks and days, and then we just roll the dice to see how long the world would end last. So we had that.
You find a nice valley, a little bit of water nearby. You look around and you say, like, just let's stay here 2 weeks and see what happens.
Let's just live. It's probably like the best that could happen in this world, actually.
Yeah.
You're like retired to a nice little valley.
I think
the only player was actually, the only player characters were actually like imprisoned by the Inquisition for being a heretic. So it wasn't that nice, but it was still, you know, he was alive.
It's like just pinned in a prison. Yeah. Do either of you ever play D&D 5e?
I have, yes.
I played it as well.
Okay.
With my kids.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's a perfect game for them. I like it. Lots of people are making fun, especially lots of Mark Borg guys are making fun of 5e, but I think every game's, you know, has its pros and cons, and I really enjoy 5e. If you're into that or in that mood,
It's a
great game if you want to be a little bit more of a superhero maybe than in Mark Borg.
Yeah, we always talk about like 5e. One of the best things about 5e compared to previous editions of D&D is how approachable it is. One of the things I observe with Mark Borg is that Mark Borg is even really more approachable. You might not survive the approach, but as far as approaching it, it's easy to get into a game. The reason I asked the question is Tyler and I are actually playing through an adventure in 5e, a published adventure, Rime of the Frostmaiden. Rime of the Frostmaiden, the setting is a little similar in the fact that, like, it's a pretty miserable world and the sun never rises because in this case, there's a magical being causing it. And that's part of the campaign is, you know, potentially, can you stop this? The whole reason that I took us down this long, long journey is that in Rime of the Frostmaiden, the sun never rises. You get a little bit of daylight, like with the sunlight coming up over the horizon. But there's never truly a sunrise. And so I always joke, anytime I have something that's like, at dawn, this happens. And I have the same feeling when I was... when I was reading Mark Borg, it's like, okay, the sun never rises. But at dawn, I'll roll my dice and potentially we'll have a misery red and this sort of thing. That was probably the first time it was obvious to me that it isn't super prescriptive and there's a lot of opportunity for a game master to kind of interpret what they will. I think that's one of the fun things with how you wrote this core rule book. So that's a compliment. And now I'll turn that into a question. The question is like, what's the most fun interpretation? Like, that was not what I meant, but I love that. And you should keep doing that, that you've seen the community come up with.
Oh, good question. Yeah. Do you have anything? I can see you thinking.
It was a very specific question.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many theories, and so because it's so intentionally vague that you have to interpret it. So there are so many theories, and you can't say if anyone is right or not because there isn't a right answer. It's just, it's kind of like we asked the question when we wrote the book. And it's up to you at the table to answer it.
We've been asked, is it possible to, you know, stop the Apocalypse to intervene? Is it possible to do that? And we, you know, we don't have that answer. It's up to your game group.
It's up to you.
Yeah. So it's might be possible to do that if you want to.
And even that, right? Like in the book, it's hinted at that maybe it isn't set in stone. Maybe it's changeable. So there's a lot of hooks where if that's the story that your game master and your table wants to experience and tell, you 100% can make it happen. Then you're actually like, now the timer isn't to end the campaign. The timer is, can you get there before the campaign ends?
But these are all the small like hooks and signs that we leave in the books that like there's no answers. It's just like, okay, so here's maybe something that you can build on, that you can pick up and make your own, you know, interpretation and campaign of. So I think it's important, like you at the table, you own this world. We don't. We just made this book, but that can only like take you somewhere in your own direction. We are never going to show up at your table and say that you're doing it wrong. Like it's your game. It's not our game. Yeah.
You've ruined Merkborg for the whole world.
Exactly. There's no game designer SWAT team that's going to play Steve and say, oh, you're doing it wrong.
Although actually, if you could pull that off at least once, that would be amazing.
Yeah. That'd be really cool. Yeah, exactly. Maybe as like a Kickstarter stretch goal. We'll see.
You heard it here first, everybody. Write that down. So we alluded to this earlier, but we didn't actually name it. So one of the next big things, John, that you're working on is Cyborg. The Kickstarter's already come out and closed. Pre-sales come out and closed. You're expecting the books to make it out in late summer. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Awesome. So what is Cyborg for the folks at home?
So Cyborg is basically a spin-off game to Merkborg. It's written by Christian Salén, also of Stockholm Cartel. So it's very simplified. It's a cyberpunk version of Merkborg with its own setting and rules based on Merkborg, but a bit adjusted and changed for the cyberpunk setting. So yeah, it's kind of like if you know what we did for like Doom and Black Metal with Merkborg, this is us doing it with like synthwave and industrial and hip hop for Cyborg.
That sounds really awesome. So is it going to be like super survivable and like all happy-go-lucky and like I'm not going to go through? No, not at all. Okay.
It is. It's very much a slightly exaggerated like commentary on our contemporary life right now in our modern society. So it's just our own like anxiety in terms of like ecological catastrophes and social media and the commodification of personal data and everything like that. So it's going to be grim, but with a hint of humor as well, as we always do.
Yeah, it's like your body has been hacked and taken over by some entity. The player character is actually that entity. The body, who knows where we got this from?
It's going to be fun. I'm sorry. I'm keeping from
you. Oh, no, you're good. You're 100%. That's the problem with it, right? The sending this communication over the ocean, the marvel of modern times, though. Yeah, one of the things I noticed in Merkborg, not nearly enough electrocution.
No, exactly. And there's not much like cyber tech and nanopowers. And there are some, stuff. But no, it's fun. Like we've expanded upon Merkborg a bit, but kept the simplicity and obviously changed the setting and the tone a bit. It's still got that like dark satire humor, but... it's slightly different.
Yeah, well, I can definitely say I'm looking forward to it. And maybe in the late summer, we'll have to reach out and see what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go into our Discord, there's a bunch of people talking about it. And you get some sneak peeks in there as well.
Awesome. All right. So we will have links in the show notes so that folks can find that. So Johan Pelith, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It was really nice to be on your show.
Absolutely. No, thank you very much. All hail the Leisure Illuminati. I'm Randall James. You can find me at amateurjack.com and on Twitter and Instagram at @JackAmateur.
I'm Tyler Kamstra. You'll find me at rpgbot.net, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at rpgbotdotnet, and patreon.com/rpgbot.
And I'm Johan Nord. You can find me at at Johan Norat on Twitter and basically all the social media stuff for Mörkborg.
Pelle Nilsson, you can't find me. But
that's fair enough. It's not a challenge, though, people. It's not a challenge.
I'm mostly talking to people on the Talk Mörkborg group on Facebook, if you want to reach out to me. And Discord.
Awesome. And we will have links in the show notes so folks can find these folks later. If you've enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcast and rate us on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. It's a quick, free way to support the podcast and helps us to reach new listeners. You can find links in the show notes. You'll find affiliate links for source books and other materials linked in the show notes, as well as on rpgbot.net. Following these links helps us to make the show happen every week. If your question should be the question of the week next week, please email podcast@rpgbot.net or message us on Twitter at rpgbotdotnet. Please also consider supporting us on Patreon, where you'll find early access to rpgbot.com content, polls for future content, and access to the rpgbot.com Discord. You can find us at patreon.com/rpgbot. All right, thanks, folks. All right, now we sit in silence. Pele, is there anything that you're working on that you want to talk about?
It's a bit secret.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.